Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White. Joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. And look, we are as topical as you're going to get with today's podcast. I mean, very rarely does the Cooler Ring intersect with global news streams in quite this way.
That's absolutely for sure. And in all honesty, with most of our guests, we've kind of avoided talking about these sorts of topics. But today we want to meet it head on.
Indeed. Yeah, but folks, you need to understand that one of the reasons that we try to avoid talking about politics is that I'm a bit of an opinionated political creature that used to work in politics in a former life. So it's a hard thing to kind of turn off and just be businessy. But Jeff's been working with me on it, and I promise to behave.
I know you'll be great. But yeah, so I am really looking forward to digging into this topic. We've got an exceptionally experienced and talented marketer on the line. And why don't we just get right into it?
Perfect.
All right. So joining us today is Una DeBoer. Una is the CMO at Whitewater West. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Una.
Hi. Thanks, everyone. I'm very impressed with your podcast voices. I hope I'm coming across nearly as...
It's great. It's great. It's at another level of what we typically experience.
Yeah, a crisp, clear, with a bit of mysteriousness to that.
Oh, there you go. And do I have to agree to behave as well?
No. All guests can do what they want. I'm the only one that needs to behave.
Apparently. Okay, excellent. Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. And I don't know how political we need to be, but certainly I think the topic today is a response to some of the things that are happening in the world right now.
Yeah, and look, we should let people know that we're recording this episode. We very rarely tell you when we record versus when it's published because, well, we don't necessarily think you need to know. But in this instance, when this is released, there could be 400 new things happen in the world of tariffs between when we record. And so I suppose we should let people know. Is that all? This might be the only time we've ever had Rich actually speak on the podcast. So let's just see if we can do. Rich, is it okay if we actually say the day that we're recording? Are you okay with that?
I am okay with that.
All right. Awesome. That was Rich, ladies and gentlemen. All right. So we're recording this on March 7th. So we're literally, it's the Friday that the day after most of the tariffs have been rescinded again, with the threat of them coming back April 2nd. And, you know, you don't have to be political to know that we're living in a world of uncertainty right now. That is largely being driven by a tariff situation. And that's what Una's going to be helping us chat through today. Una, perhaps before we jump into that, could you maybe introduce us to the company that you work for a little bit, Whitewater?
So Whitewater West, we just go by Whitewater, is the world's largest manufacturer of water slides in the world. But we don't just make water slides, we make aquatic play. You've probably seen on the back of cruise ships those surf simulators. That's Flowrider, that's one of our brands. We've now expanded into the world of really large man-made surf pools. So think Kelly Slater's Wave, but we've got something that's huge and flexible, and it's going to change the world of surf for sure. We have a technology software as a service brand. So the audience that I serve is kind of the world of theme parks and water parks and attractions around the world. It's a truly global industry, but it's a very tiny little niche. It's certainly the most glamorous my career has ever been. I get to go on some pretty great business trips to water parks around the world. Although it is too bad that I had to start wearing a swimsuit for work when I turned 40.
There's so much baked into all of that. I mean, it's probably one of the coolest, you know, actual manufacturing. Hard to fathom that it's a B2B business too, but just given the context of what we're going to be speaking about today, where is the company primarily based? You mentioned it's a worldwide company, but where?
It is, yeah. So I'm in beautiful British Columbia. So we're based in Vancouver, but we are truly global. We have offices in Shanghai, in Munich, in Germany, in Dubai, in the UAE. We have an office for our surf brands that is based down in San Diego in the US. So it's a global company and we market globally.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on the program. And I wonder if we could maybe learn a little bit more about how you ended up at WhiteWater as well. But tell us a bit more about your background.
Well, you can probably tell from my somewhat mutated accent that I originated on the other side of the Atlantic. So I grew up in the UK and I started my career working for Royal Mail, leading the campaign team there. So I was responsible for generating junk mail, as my friends would tell me. And then I went to work for a really large services company, Rentokil Initials. So Rentokil kills things and Initial cleans things. So I was responsible for the hygiene brands globally. I found this handsome Canadian along my travels and ended up marrying him. And I think Canadians and Kiwis, they always want to go home. So we relocated to Canada about 2011. I managed to miss both Olympics, the one in London and the one in Vancouver. And I've been here and I love, I'm a Canadian now and I'm proud of it and independent.
It's a little known thing that the only kind of Canadian men there are the handsome ones. It's actually quite a remarkable thing for the country.
It stands out as a thing we should put out there more.
Right. I agree. But, you know.
A bit biased, however. Okay. Well, look, let's jump into this feet first. I mean, because your message is quite, while there are lots of nuances to the message, I'm sure, it is in some ways quite simple. It's that this isn't a time for marketing to step to the background. This isn't a time for marketing to be quiet.
Absolutely not. And I know that there's a huge level of uncertainty in companies as they're facing up to tariffs and how are they going to respond? I think one of the challenges that owners are going to face is concern about their bottom line. And sometimes that means actually cutting back on marketing. It's an area where it's easy to make cuts. My challenge is to everyone, you should be doing the opposite. This is a time when you need to be looking for new customers and new places and avenues to sell your product. And that means you need to be investing in marketing. And perhaps that means you need to look beyond the current customer base that you've got, particularly if you are Canadian and North American focused. But maybe your audience is much broader and we're talking to a group of Americans who are trying to sell into Canada, and that's also going to become increasingly challenging. So I thought it would be a really great opportunity to talk about international marketing. What are the steps you should take? You know, how different is it? How can we help companies? Because we all want to have thriving economies, and I don't think any of us are loving the situation we find ourselves in. So what can we practically do to sort of protect that bottom line and continue to see that, you know, in every challenge, there is an opportunity.
Yeah. And you're known to say that, that the Canadian-US relationship is one of convenience. You know, we're close to each other. It makes a lot of sense for us to do a lot of trading. But as you were just mentioning, you know, should really be using this as an opportunity to explore new markets. How far afield do you think people should be thinking as they're going about tackling this issue?
Well, there are some markets internationally that are more challenging to enter than others. But I think you need to be guided by your current customer base and what you sell. So the first place I would look is who are you selling to right now? when you look at traffic to your website, where is that traffic coming from? You know, it's you are probably ignoring opportunities in your current customer base. And I suspect most companies will see their international customers, if you're a manufacturer, if you're business to business, they're probably finding you already, but you're just not actively going out to serve those audiences. There's, you know, in all things a kind of continuum. And I think if you want to go jumping feet first into China, you might find that a very challenging transition. The culture is very different. The platforms are completely different. WeChat and Baidu, it's not Google, it's not LinkedIn. And the language itself, you know, I'm certainly not fluent in Mandarin. So you're going to find that a much more complicated transition in terms of expanding internationally than you would perhaps if you were looking at, you know, going into European countries or into the Middle East. Although there are cultural factors you need to understand in every single market, and it kind of depends what you're selling. So if I look at selling into the Middle East for Whitewater, while many of the platforms and channels are easy for us to navigate, we have to be very careful about imagery. You know, we tend to show consumers on water slides in, you know, swimsuits and bikinis, and that doesn't go down well in Saudi Arabia. So you need to be thinking as you're looking at your markets about those cultural factors in, you know, how easy is it for me to take this step? And I would certainly start small and take smaller steps to begin with so that you learn how to expand out.
It occurs to me that not only are you maybe having to bring a different cultural sensitivities and nuances to the marketing as you begin to diversify your markets, but for many manufacturers, I would think it also means that they end up having to use muscles that they haven't either had to use before or haven't had to use for a very long time. In terms of, they may be a dominant brand within their existing markets. They may be quite well known within a customer base. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden they need to play the awareness game again. You know, they haven't had to try to do that for a long time. You know, I can think of dozens, hundreds of manufacturing organizations that, you know, they live off the fact that they've had salespeople for the last 30 or 40 years that know everybody in the categories that they serve. Has that kind of entered into your mind as well, that there's a kind of, sometimes you're actually attacking a different part of the buyer's journey when you go into a market that you just don't have that history in?
Well, for sure. And then think about what that's going to do for your marketing overall. If you've been on cruise control because you are an established brand in a market, and now you're going to have to step up your game and learn how to position yourself in a new place, that's only going to help your core marketing as well, because you're going to start to re-examine how you position yourself, what your product market fit is, how do you reach your customers, where are they? And these are all fundamental questions we should be re-asking ourselves on a fairly regular basis to deliver excellent marketing. Let's start with, there are a few things that I would suggest if you're starting to think about international markets. Are you ready? Are you ready to step outside of your comfort zone? The markets you're looking at, you know, who's serving those markets right now? If you are not the dominant brand, you have competitors who are. Do you know who they are? What is it they're selling? How similar is that offer to your offer? Do you know where your customers are in those marketplaces? Is it a very similar market structure? So, you know, if I think about my current industry, there is a very established trade association. And the buyers, they come to the trade shows that are organized by that trade association. Is that true in the market that you're in? Or is it more retail-led and you're actually going to have to look at establishing a distribution network, looking at partners who can bring you into that marketplace? So it does change according to how global the industry is and how fragmented that industry is. You know, are there many local suppliers or are there a few global suppliers?
That makes sense to me. I mean, frankly, and it's really kind of hard to argue with what you're saying. But what's interesting to me is like none of this sounds cheap, right? We started this off by saying, you know, we're leaning into a time when people are maybe inclined to dial back their marketing spend. And we're not saying just dial it up because you need to diversify into new markets, but you may be doing some of the marketing that actually has the least ROI attached to it, that early awareness stage building and things of that sort, that you may not be able to draw really quick revenue attribution to. It seems like a challenge on both sides of it.
So yes and no. I don't think it necessarily needs to cost an awful lot to dip your toe in the water. So if you think about some of the some of what you're doing already, you're probably already doing social media. You probably already have a decent enough website and you're doing some digital marketing, Google AdWords, pay-per-click, you know, all sorts of that type of stuff. How have you targeted that? Once you've identified that there seem to be buyers who seem to be interested and have occasionally bought your product in market, you know, X or Y, have you tried targeting those with your digital marketing? Yes, you're going to be expanding your digital budget, but it's extremely controllable. You can turn it on or off. You can do it from the comfort of your current office. You don't have to be in that market to start doing that. Are you sponsoring your LinkedIn posts in those geographic regions? So that's a very small step. It's very scalable as a way to get started to see whether that starts to generate any interest. If you know, the great thing about starting from digital is you'll see immediately the traffic difference. You'll notice when you know the profiles change, and that yes, you are reaching those audiences because you'll see it in your Google and analytics coming through. The steps to start, you know, doing full market entry, I would probably get a PR company, and I would be looking at really sort of trying to target some local press. Build those relationships, some trade shows, some sponsorships. Yeah, that's going to cost more, but you don't have to do it globally. Choose the markets that you feel have the best return for you that will enable you to make the most rapid headway, and scale it. You know, it's definitely something that you can step into market by market. You don't have to suddenly go global. And I wouldn't recommend that. I would test, I would learn, I would review, and move forward on that basis.
I think that all makes a great deal of sense. I want to peel back a little bit. You know, because I believe that there would be marketers and sales folks who would be listening to this episode who are like, this all makes a ton of sense. I want to do this. You have a great deal of experience and are part of the C-suite in your organization.
Yeah.
If you're not, how do you bring this message to the C-suite, to the decision makers within an organization that, you know, in these crazy uncertain times with the imposition of tariffs and things like that, we need to double down on our marketing and not cut budgets. You know, how do you convince people of that?
Lean in on the data. And I think that, you know, you're going to have to be convincing the CFO and the shareholders. So, you know, just show them the money. What is it that you anticipate will stop coming in as revenue? If you are predominantly looking at sales in North America, what percentage of your sales is that in comparison to other markets? And the conversation you need to be starting is, how are we filling this gap? If we see there is going to be, and we're anticipating, a rapid drop in, you know, in our ability to sell to these customers, we need to be finding alternative revenue sources. Let's start that conversation. This is an opportunity for us, and then bring the data that says, look, we've already started selling this product to this market over here, you know, or there's an opportunity we started to explore. So let me give you an example. And it's a vertical example, not a geographic example, but I think it shows what I'm talking about. We have a software as a service offering within our portfolio called Vantage. And it was designed to track guests as they wander through a water park so that you can make it easier for them. Open lockers with a wristband, pay for things with a wristband. But it also gives a whole load of data for the water park to understand how their customers are experiencing the slides, wait times, things like that. And we started marketing it. And we noticed that a lot of hotels and resorts were responding to our marketing. And we were getting great engagement from hotels and resorts to this, to the things we were talking about the guest journey and guest experiences in within a venue. And the convenience that you're trying to drive, which opened up the ability for us to go, oh, this is really resonating, and there's market fit for hotels and resorts. It wasn't our primary market for that product. We were looking at the market that we know well, which is water parks and theme parks. But now we've been able to extend our reach into the hotels and resorts area and create activities and campaigns and reports that really help educate them and show them what this opportunity is. So that's why I'm saying, when you're trying to convince some of your C-suite about the need to look into new areas, you probably, if you dig around in your data, have indications of where you can go instead that maybe you're missing. Just go find those things. They're probably there.
I wonder, too, if this is an interesting kind of trigger point for more inside-driven sales activities. If we're looking at kind of more rapid market diversification, building out a sales team in a new market, sometimes a bit intimidating, takes some time. Have you seen that is sometimes this type of pivot can be associated with also moving to a bit more of an inside sales model, so that sales piece can scale geographically maybe a bit easier?
Well, for sure. I mean, the big difference that you're going to have is potentially a language barrier. So when you start to look at international marketing, and if you are using an inside sales team, if you are sort of looking into South America, yeah, there's opportunities there, but if you really want to use inside sales, they're going to have to speak in Spanish or Portuguese. So you're still probably going to have to think about those factors, which is why I think starting with your CRM and looking at your email marketing might be a great way to move forward. It's much easier to control your message and to translate things and try to do some email marketing that to start that conversation and see what that engagement is. So looking at your customer data and seeing repurchase patterns, having a look at like, where is there an opportunity for us to go back to existing customers? I mean, every marketeer should be starting with existing customers before they try to go out to new customers, because you've already established that connection. The return on investment is going to be much higher. So I would completely agree. Start with who you've sold to and then move out from there. And that's not to say that your existing customers in the markets that are tariffed are just going to ditch you. That, you know, there may be other alternatives where you are thinking about pricing mechanisms, you know, ancillary offers that enable you to keep those relationships alive. So if I look at water slides, we have a large North American water park industry. But we also, you know, you might not be in a position to buy a new multi-million dollar water slide, but a refurbishment project, trying to make sure you're maintaining your existing slides. We have a service line of the business. Go back out to our North American customers and say, okay, so perhaps your capital expenditure budget is on hold at the moment. Let's make sure we're here to help you maintain your existing product. And those are the types of opportunities that you could be exploring within your existing customer base, which will not be tariffed to the same extent as goods that you're actually selling into those markets.
That's a really great point, because it's not about diversification of markets at that point. It's about diversification of the service that you offer into an existing market.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And not abandoning a great potential group of existing customers. Either. I mean, offering them other alternatives to work with you that aren't going to be tariffed in the same way is really quite brilliant.
Why, thank you. I'm not sure it's an entirely original idea, but I think it's an example of how my recommendation is starting to understand really what's happening in your customer base, in your data, looking to see who they are, what they're buying, how often they're buying, where are new people buying or interest. And the same is true with your marketing. You know, where do you get responses? Where are people coming from? And if you start from that point, it's because it's already working, and it's much more likely to be successful as you expand out from there. Small steps are more likely to deliver that ROI you're talking about. You know, as you said, moving into an entirely new market where you need to make sure you understand the legal and compliance factors, that you understand the data protection laws. If you go into Europe, there are very different data protection factors that you need to be aware of. Sustainability regulations. Your audience is a largely manufacturing audience, I understand, and therefore, you know, the sustainability regulations that are in Europe are much more stringent than they are in North American markets. Are you ready to be able to meet those requirements? And there are some things you need to really understand before you step into those markets, so it doesn't end up costing you. So aside from just looking at your customer base, make sure that you understand the markets that those customers are coming from and your ability to step into those profitably. And make sure you're protected. You know, do you have your intellectual property patented in the markets that you're looking to go into? You do not want to be jumping into a brand new space and not protecting yourself because you have some short-term revenue needs that ends up creating a huge long-term problem for you. So there are some checks that you need to do to get ready, which would include understanding regulation compliance, protecting your intellectual property before you make those moves. And yes, there are costs associated with that. But if your product really has potential in these markets, you should probably be looking at protecting your intellectual property in those markets anyway.
Yeah, that's powerful advice.
I want to, just before you jump in with your next question, because I'm pretty sure I know where you're going, I wanted to just ask about one thing that you mentioned, you know, around, you know, Europe has higher sustainability requirements for a lot of things. There's an interesting angle there for, you know, perhaps a North American company that has chosen to differentiate themselves on those angles. I mean, those could be real opportunities for companies who go to market as a more sustainable alternative in North America, which might give them a leg up to their competitors who may also be envisioning the EU as the land of opportunity right now. So just an interesting thing kind of popped in my head as you were mentioning that.
Well, you know, I think it's something we all have a responsibility to be doing. And in Whitewater, we just sort of went through the process of becoming ISO 14001 certified, which is a sustainability sort of process. I think lots of people as manufacturers know 9001, the quality certification. So there's an environmental one. And I think if you are going to use sustainability as a differentiator, you better make sure that you can prove it, that it's a credible part of your offer, not greenwashing. And for us, we chose to go down the 14001 route as the way that we were demonstrating the authenticity of this as part of our offer.
Very cool. Sorry to interrupt you, Carmen.
No, not at all. It wasn't an interruption. It's actually, I almost forgot my question, though, because I thought it was kind of interesting and I started following along too much. But but no, I did the... I guess where I was going to go is I think there's an interesting kind of competitive shift that might be happening here too, because while we may be looking at the tariff situation and saying, some North American companies might be looking more towards Europe as an example. I wonder if the reverse is happening where, an awful lot of European manufacturers have looked at entry into the U.S. market as their greatest growth potential.
And there's going to be more space for them. So if, the tariffs really penalize other Canadians, some of those European manufacturers might be like, well, we're going to be cheaper than those tariffed Canadian companies. So it could actually, you're right, stimulate some market entry from your competitors in other markets coming into your home turf.
That, and I was wondering too if the European manufacturers may double down on serving European customers, actually making new market entry more difficult as well.
I don't think so. I mean, they probably already, most of us don't make big changes until we have to. We work and it's kind of like a status quo, these types of changes and doubling down or entering new markets, they require effort. So I suspect these guys are probably just going to keep doing what they're doing, but see an opportunity somewhere else and possibly not the threat, because they know that it's not easy to make this step. It's not impossible by any means either. But I generally speaking, companies ignore their own customers and are more focused on looking for new customers. If you look at, how marketing budgets are balanced, I would say acquisition definitely outstrips loyalty spend. So I suspect they probably won't.
Yeah, anybody that's looked at the promotion of a phone company about their latest package deals or what have you, and then looked at their own phone bill and knows that the difference between acquisition and loyalty spend.
Oh yeah, we just canceled Disney one of our family TV channels, and suddenly it's available at a rapidly reduced price that wasn't when I was a subscriber. So you just. Early in my career, I worked in, consulted on direct marketing to some financial services companies. And the churn that credit card companies create by constantly having an offer for new customer acquisition and ignoring their existing customer base, you're just training your customers to go shopping on a regular basis. It's crazy, but,
Well, I feel like we could probably continue having this conversation for hours, frankly, and find kind of interesting nooks and crannies to go down. And
there's one thing before we head out of this conversation that I do want to bring up, and that is about branding. Because when you look at international markets, I think you talked about, yes, you're going to have to work on awareness and you're going to have to invest to a greater extent. But I think there is a challenge that most people face, and that is how consistent they are with their brand positioning. So there is a cultural element you need to be factoring in with international marketing. And you may be encouraged by, you know, especially if you establish entities or salespeople in those markets, to try and rapidly change how you go to market and what you say to fit the culture of that environment. And I would say be cautious. Remember that media, especially digital, is increasingly global. So it's very hard to say something in one market that isn't going to come back to you in your home markets. So as you look to start marketing internationally, make sure that you are comfortable with this global versus local brand positioning. And if you are looking, and probably one of the easiest things to do is start outsourcing some of your marketing because it's in a different language. So, you know, whether it's a PR agency or a social media supplier, to look at WeChat, for example, make sure that you know what's being said. Make sure that you understand how you are going to market, and it's not blind faith and trust, because your brand is your, I believe, your greatest asset. And you talked about some of those investments being long-term. Well, you have spent a lot of time creating that brand reputation. Don't let these steps you take erode it, because you're not in control of your message. So there's a kind of a careful step carefully with your brand as you make this step into international markets.
That's great advice.
That is fantastic advice. I can think of so many instances where when people are entering into a new market, and almost the further away it is geographically from their current market, almost more wiggle room, I feel sometimes they think they have, or will, and I don't know that they always think about that other side about most media is very global these days, particularly digital, and it will come back to the home market. And I could see, you know, various tools to help with brand consistency, brand archetypes being, you know, right up there among them. I can see that as being kind of a useful kind of backdrop tool for brand consistency across a more international footprint. It allows you to maybe interpret some of the cultural nuances more uniquely while still communicating a consistent archetype.
Yeah, and I think everyone is going to do this differently, but starting from home and reaching out, and then starting to have, you know, a couple of suppliers, don't rush into this. Do it cautiously. Do it with market research. Test, but stay true to who you are, because the reason you've had success is because your product works for a group of people. You know, you've established that reputation and build on that. All I'm saying is, take these international steps based on who you are and where you are, and expand from there, and do it gently, and use the things that you can do from your home to reach out before jumping in with 2 feet. Because, you know, there is more complexity with international marketing. I don't want to make it sound more difficult than it is, because it's very achievable. And I think when companies go back into their data, they'll see that they're kind of already doing it. They've just not recognized that opportunity.
There's something really nice about the idea of moving forward gently in 2025.
Indeed.
In the current climate.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah, so we could apply that to much more broadly than marketing.
But, exceptional advice for exceptionally unusual time. Thank you so much for joining us, Una. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, it's been great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.